Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success, so you know something I can really do this.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everybody. This is your host, Jason Staples. About a week later than intended on the recording of this post-spring practice wrap-up, where this may extend into two episodes, depending on how long this takes to record. But last week, I basically got too sick to be able to record as I wanted to. Essentially wasn't at a point where I wanted to be talking all that much because of some issues that I had with my throat. So given the couple throat surgeries that I've had in the past, when my throat gets to that point, I'm not talking a whole lot unless I have to. So now that things are a bit better, time to get to it. Time to talk about what we learned from the spring, what we saw in the spring game. I think for the most part, just first impression, the first thing that stood out to me is that my sources, who had been reporting stuff to me all spring about this and that, were not lying, and for the most part, it looked like what they'd been saying was true. Although, as we'll get into it, we'll talk about how I thought there were a couple things that were maybe a bit more positive than some of the reports that I'd gotten from some of my sources in and around the program. So that's a positive. But that said, it still really was not the spring practice that I think Florida State was hoping for. Again, based on some of the sources around the program, the sense was that they got off to a really good start in that first week. And then the spring break that happened between the first week and the second week of practice sort of derailed the momentum that they had established in that first week coming out of the off-season conditioning program, which had gone really well. They thought they'd managed to get players working the way that they wanted in that. But the level of focus that they had in that first week and some of the gains that they were able to make in that first week weren't really sustained over the course of all 4 weeks of practice, and so it was an uneven spring practice. That said, without a doubt, Jimbo Fisher pushed harder, I think, this spring than he has in a while in terms of really putting the screws not only to players but with assistant coaches and really making sure that the details are right and that nothing really can be overlooked. And of course, with Alabama on deck, with the nation's most talented roster and reigning top coach in all of human history, at least if you listen to most, and of course Fisher's mentor, Nick Saban, with that the team that you're preparing to play, well, yeah, of course you're going to be that much more motivated, that much more detail oriented, and Fisher definitely let this team know in the spring about how, listen, if you don't pay attention to this detail, if you don't get this right, then you are not going to win that opener, because you can rest assured that Alabama is going to have the same kind of attention to detail that I'm demanding. So, Fisher definitely tried to push more for that attention to detail and get more and micromanage in that respect more than in the past. And also, I think this was probably the most physical spring practice, might have been the most physical spring practice that Fisher's had. I mean, they went full contact, full scrimmage situations in pads, to the ground tackling kind of stuff, more than they have, at least since that I can remember in the Fisher tenure. I mean, this was more like the kind of spring practices that that we would have in the Bowden era, where you'd spend, you know, half an hour on goal line. Because, you know, you want to build that level of fight and physicality in your team. And so you're just going to spend time going offense versus defense and goal line and see who actually wants to keep playing once you've gotten hit a few times. And they did that several times over the course of this spring. They spent a tremendous amount of time doing goal line, short yardage, you know, half a practice on goal line type stuff. And again, this is Fisher understanding, first of all, understanding who his opening opponent is, as we just talked about. And Alabama is going to be physical. They're going to force you to play in a phone booth. They're going to force you to be able to handle their size and their physicality and their presence in between the tackles, regardless of what scheme they're running. They're going to do that on both the offensive on both offense and defensive sides of the ball. That you're going to have to line up and actually be a man against Alabama to be able to beat Alabama. And Fisher understands that. But also, I think this is a lot of Fisher understanding what kind of team this needs to be if it's going to be the team that he thinks it can be. If it's going to be a championship contender, if this is a team that can make the playoff and contend for a title, Fisher knows that this team has to be a run-first, physical football team that is not based on just, you know, lining up in the shotgun four wide receivers and tossing it all around the field. He knows he can't do that with, you know, great success with a sophomore DeAndre Francois, although, you know, we'll talk about this in a moment, but I think Francois did show some improvement in the spring game. He knows he doesn't have the roster to do that, but he knows he's got the roster to line up with two tights, a 230-pound running back or a 215-pound jet at running back, and pound the rock 30, 40 times if need be. He knows he can do that and then throw vertical with his big-armed quarterback to some big wide receivers on the outside and to some tight ends who can create some mismatches with their size. He knows he can do that stuff and become a power team and a play action team, which is a lot of what they did last year with Dalvin Cook. I mean, Cook was the straw that stirred the drink last year. But Fisher understood coming into the spring what kind of team he needed this to be on offense. He also knew that he needed to put the screws to some of those young offensive linemen to find out who he'd be able to go to war with next year. And then the other thing is that he knew that they needed to get better stopping the run, even though they've got a lot of talent, and that defensive line is maybe the deepest and most talented in the country. You can make a case for them. They're right there with Alabama and Clemson and Ohio State in that discussion for the best defensive lines in the country. But they still need to stop the run better than they certainly better than they did last year at different points. So he knew that this needed to be a physical spring. It needed to be a spring where he upped the accountability, upped the level of attention to detail, upped the requirements that everybody be fundamentally sound, that they play the way that he's demand, you know, that he demand a certain level, and they tried to hold to that. That said, it was not as successful in that regard as what they'd hoped for, partly because they got banged up. I mean, that's one of the things that happens when you do spring practice that in that physical way. I mean, I remember when back in, I want to say it was spring of 01, Jeff Bowden wound up getting T-shirts made for those who made it through all 15 practices. I don't remember what they said or whatnot. I was one of the few people actually who did make it through all 15 practices, although with a separated shoulder, unfortunately, which made it pretty. It was not the most fun experience of my life in that regard, but to make it through spring in those days without missing a day, without missing multiple days, knowing that you're banging and that you are that you're going to be going after each other that with that level of physicality on a day by day basis, that was unusual. A lot of guys, most guys, didn't make it through all 15 days without a miss. And, you know, now with more concussion concerns and things like that, they're even more likely to pull a guy out So, you know, you lose some time when you're going to play that, when you're going to be that physical. But the thing is, I think Fisher, again, understood what where some of the limitations of last year's team were. And this is something that on this podcast we discussed. Last year, you know, those of you who've listened to this podcast for a while will remember that, you know, going into the after the Ole Miss game, you know, after the Louisville game, after you know, different points in the season, one of the things that we really addressed on this podcast about what was wrong with the program at that point was, you know, I called into question the level of physicality. And one of the things that I brought up on that podcast is, as often as guys are held out because of the GPS stuff, as often as guys, you know, it's great to apply science. And this is what, you know, I talked about at that point. It's great to apply science and a very measured approach to training, that, you know, doing the mat drills type thing where you're just, you know, grinding guys isn't necessarily going to make you better physically. Although, you know, we did get better physically in mat drills, but it may not be the most optimal way to improve the body. But there is a certain level of toughness that you have to have, that you had to have to get through some of the stuff that we used to do, that establishes a certain pride, that establishes a certain toughness that I thought last year's team really lacked. And they started getting better at it toward midseason, and especially once they got some of the bell cows back on defense, they were better at it. But that was still not a real physical team. That was still a team that just didn't look like, and as I said, you know, then, when was the last time Florida State went out on a field and just physically dominated, out-hit their opponent? And it had been a while, I think, last year, thinking about that was one of the questions I asked. When was the last time Florida State went in and just out-hit a peer? Not just outplayed, not outscored, but out-hit. And that's something I think Fisher, when they went back and they did their self-scouting, I think he recognized that as well. And you got to give Fisher a lot of credit. I mean, the guy, if you want to make a criticism of Fisher as a coach, he's overly flexible. You know, he's everything is always up for reevaluation, and you know that he can do that to a fault. But in this regard, this is where it's a major strength. He takes very seriously their self-scout, and I think they were concerned that last year there was a loss of accountability on some things, and actually the last few years, going back to 2014, and there was a general loss of physicality in the program. That's something that he wanted to get taken care of this spring, and that's really where they put the attention. And given that, you know, it was a mixed bag in the spring. They didn't get out of the spring as much as they wanted, with as many guys as got banged up, particularly up front on the offensive line, with some of the focus that they lost after that week off. My sources in the program were not as optimistic about the spring, certainly going into the spring game, as what you'd like to see. That said, I was actually much more optimistic after I watched the spring game. I mean, I'd gotten a text from one source at one point during spring ball, we can't block anybody. And, you know, that's not a good thing to hear, although against that defensive line, I get it. But when I was watching the spring game, I was actually encouraged. I saw some guys that are going to that if Florida State's going to be able to block anybody, if they're going to be able to block Alabama, there are going to be a couple guys that they're going to need to depend on, and those guys looked better than I expected in the spring game, specifically Josh Ball and Bavion Johnson. And, you know, I think the spring game in general was I think there's a lot to be encouraged by what we actually saw, by what we got to see. Now, again, it's difficult because of the way they divide the teams. It's difficult because of the nature of how vanilla things are. And, you know, one guy playing with somebody else that he normally wouldn't be next to, lined up across from a walk-on or whatever, that stuff makes it more difficult to evaluate. But there's still stuff there that you can evaluate. And generally speaking, I was encouraged by what I saw. And so for the rest of this particular episode, what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk through what I thought the keys were for 2017 coming into the spring, and then what we can basically determine was was learned in during the spring and in the spring game, what we could actually detect, you know, about those particular things. Number one, if this team's going to be successful in 2017, DeAndre Francois has to show some improvement over his freshman campaign. And listen, everybody knows Francois may be the toughest SOB at the position in the country. The shots that he took last year, his willingness to stand in there until the last second and make those throws, going all the way back to the opening game against Ole Miss, that throw he made before halftime said worlds about this guy as a tough player willing to stand in and take the punishment to make big plays for his team. There's no questioning that. But he's got to be able in 2017 to manage the pocket, get rid of the football more quickly, process information a bit better, and then be more accurate in specific areas where he struggled some last year. And that's in some of the short zones where he would sometimes, you know, it's one of those issues where changing speeds with the ball he was struggling with, and there were times where he'd bounce pass it or he'd airmail it on some of the shorter, easy throws that should be rhythm throws. And, you know, that stuff should be automatic. And then on some of the downfield stuff, you know, bucket throws and your deep posts and things like that, he was also not as accurate as what you'd hope for somebody who has the arm strength that he has, who can spin it like he does. And again, those are both related. The really short stuff and the longer stuff, those are both related to touch and the ability to control the ball with your hand and to throw, with, you know, under control there. And honestly, I think Francois showed some improvement in both of those areas in this game. You look at some of the shorter stuff on the underneath stuff. I thought he did a much better job changing speeds, throwing to guys in stride. There were a number of plays where they ran a lot of X cross in this game or the Peyton Manning levels concept that is one of my go-to concepts actually as a coach. And they ran a ton of that, by the way, back in EJ Manuel and Christian Ponder days. Ran more of that in those days than just about any other time. They also dialed it up some to, sorry to use the Jesse Palmerism there, but they also ran it a good bit to Rashad Green's senior year when they just needed to get the ball in his hand. There were times that they used that X cross thing. And basically what it is you got an option route from the inside receiver, usually a tight end. At 10 to 12, he's going to do an option route at 12 yards, and then you're going to have it's sort of a delayed, but you know, it's an in route from that outside receiver at 5 yards underneath that, and the quarterback's going to hit the in to the outside receiver every time if it's there, and sometimes you can put two ins from outside receivers, and you take whichever one is going to come open. You know, you do that, and then again, you have that option on the if you go trips to one side, you can do that. But either way, in order to make that throw on the in route there, you have to really put that right in front of your guy's eyes, and you want to lead him across the field a little bit so that he can run through that ball. And you know, this is the play that Rashad Green scored a touchdown on against Virginia Tech back in 2011, I believe it was, to win that game. Late, where you know, Manuel found him, and you know, all of a sudden the field clears because you've got a guy running underneath, and everybody else is running with their receivers with their coverage, and it's a beautiful thing because the seas part a lot of times for that guy, and it's a short 5 yard completion that if you've got a receiver who can run, can turn into a big play, and that's great for a guy like Noonie Murray. It's also great for some bigger receivers like your Keith Gavins. And they actually ran it some to 81. They ran it some to Izzo in the spring game, you know, lining up with the tight end on the outside. You can do it with a bigger body as well. But if you got a guy that can run it, that can run with it, if you lead him across the field a little bit, he can take off. And I was pleased generally with what I saw about the location from Francois on those throws in this game. They were improved compared to what he was doing on comparable throws last year. You know, he was hitting generally guys with a more controlled speed and more in stride. Now, there were a number of drops, particularly from Phillips, who had a rough spring game, frankly, He'd been having a little bit better spring, from what I understood, than what he had spring game. It just appears he took a step back for that. But, you know, a number of those were dropped, a few of them. But at the same point, they were quality, much more high quality throws than what we saw on the comparable stuff last year. And I think we'll see again a good number of those types of throws in the fall to give him some options. Again, option route to the tight end, and then that in. Those are pretty quick reads for a quarterback, and they pair really well with a zone running attack, or just with generally being able to run the football. Because you're going to have to keep more guys in and around the box, and then you're not able to cover that option route as well with the tight end. You also don't have that box defender, that edge defender. You're going to have to keep him in the box instead of running him out to take away that in from the outside wide receiver. So there's some advantages to pairing that with being able to run the football the way that I think they're going to try to run it in the fall. So, you know, the other thing is that, you know, he hit that deep post, you know, nicely in rhythm, well-thrown ball to Phillips. Again, it was dropped, but showed some touch putting that in a good space and in a place where if Phillips is just able to keep his feet, he can run through that. He could still be running. So, you know, I was pleased generally with what I saw in terms of some improvement in terms of location from Francois. Yes, there were still some misses, but I thought they were generally better misses than what we had. Fewer treons. Again, remember, a treon is a throw that is not catchable by anyone, whether it be defender, offensive player, whatever. It's just a totally uncatchable football. And of course, you know, named in honor of Treon Harris, who well known for such throws. You know, this I was pleased with what I saw in terms of location. I think there was some growth. Is it major growth? Is it a massive step forward? No, but enough to think that, you know, I think there's been a little bit of growth there. And as he's gotten healthier, shoulders gotten healthy and so on, we can expect, you know, at least a little bit of reasonable improvement in that regard. The other thing is that it looked to me, and again, it's hard to judge on this in this kind of game context. It looked to me like he was processing a little more quickly and was understanding coverages more quickly and was able to process all that better than what he did as a freshman. And, you know, of course, you look at that and you say, well, what about the pick six? What about some of the mistakes that we saw? And it didn't look like he was getting rid of the football all that quickly at different points. Well, that's part of where it's difficult to measure, because he was playing with Phillips and a bunch of walk-on wide receivers. Now, he missed Keith Gavin on one. You know, Gavin in the no contact jersey, you know, played the first series, basically, first two series, and blocked like a maniac. But he missed Keith Gavin on a drive route or crossing route on the one where he ended up getting tackled around the line of scrimmage, or tapped, I guess, around the line of scrimmage by Fred Jones on that drive. He missed Gavin there. But aside from that, generally speaking, when he was holding the football, he appeared to be going to the proper side based on coverage for the concepts that he was looking at. So he's looking, you know, starting the right side. And then also, when he was hesitating, it was often because the receiver was either in the wrong spot or was just flat covered. And, you know, that's where I'm looking at, is he ready to pull the trigger at the right time? And it looked to me like he was ready to pull the trigger more frequently at the right time than otherwise. And, you know, again, more often than he was last year. As for the interception, actually, that was, again, on an X cross concept. And the thing about the X cross is, if you've got an inside leverage corner, so a corner playing, trying to take away the inside, which, again, that outside receiver is coming on an in at the 5 yard spot. If the corner hedges, if the corner plays hard there and tries to take away the inside, Florida State has the Fisher's offense for that particular play has the caboose rule, is what it's called, where if you're the caboose, if you are the farthest outside wide receiver and the corner takes away the inside, then it just becomes a pivot route and you just turn it outside. So instead of trying to fight through the inside leverage corner, if you can't get past him easily, if you can't fight through pretty quickly, then you just stick your foot in the ground and it becomes a 5-yard pivot route, and the quarterback throws it outside. And you know, leads you to the sideline, and then you know, ideally, you've got a little bit of you've got the defensive back on your back, and if you've got a wide receiver who can run, that can turn into a really big play, because you've got potentially a wide receiver who can run away from that defender on his back. If you can put it in stride, run it away from the corner and from the safeties straight up the sideline. Well, in this case, what happened on that pick six by Kyle Myers is Myers played inside leverage. It was a man coverage concept. And Myers took away the inside, but didn't take it away hard. He kind of slow played it. And Phillips, instead of choosing one or the other, which is what you have to do, you either come across on the X cross or you stick your foot in the ground and you pivot. You can't stay in the middle. You can't do neither, right? What Phillips did is he looked like he recognized that inside leverage and, you know, looked like he could have actually gotten over top of it and just come inside. And then, you know, Francois just throws the usual inside, short 5-yard in and probably gets tackled for 6-yard gain or something if it's not broken up. Or, you know, he could have potentially stuck his foot in the ground and taken off to the outside. It would have been acceptable there because of the inside leverage. Instead, he stuck his foot in the ground and then just stopped and stayed. Well, Francois threw the outside like you expect to on that concept when the receiver runs it right, and receiver wasn't there. He threw it to the outside shoulder, and Myers actually jumped outside and took the football. So, you know, this is one of those things where, again, this gets back to why wide receivers at the college level need experience. You generally speaking, these are the sorts of things that, you know, high school wide receivers are not required to do. College receivers in basically every offense in the country, you have to learn to do this stuff. And if you don't do it right, it's pick six. And if you don't stick your foot in the ground and get out with conviction, it's pick six. And this is why young guys don't contribute all that often at wide receiver unless they're more advanced coming out of high school, more polished in that regard, even if they're really physically gifted. But we'll talk about that in a moment. In any case, this is the stuff that, you know, I thought sort of mitigated some of the places where, you know, the completion percentage was not that high and so on. A lot of that is just due to who he's surrounded by receivers needing to be more precise and all that. But I thought a lot of the things that I would look for grading the quarterback were a little bit better. You know, I'm talking, you know, 15, say, percent better than what they were last year. The one thing that still concerns me in terms of Francois is the footwork. There were still some times where the footwork was sloppy, particularly has a tendency to false step with his left foot in the shotgun so that he ends up a beat behind in terms of not being able to get the ball out when he needs to, because as he's catching the snap, he's taking a false step with the left foot, and then that puts him basically an extra step behind, or sometimes he takes an extra 2 steps in the drop as he's settling his balance, and again, he gets a beat behind because of it. And that can affect his location. And probably the best place to see that is if you look at the very end of the game when they went into the goal line situation from the 1-yard line and had him throw that out. And the first one was an out route to a slot receiver, to 87 Jackson. And it was low and away, and it could have been a better throw, and it should have been out earlier. And the reason it wasn't was footwork. If you look at it, he catches it, takes a false step with his left foot, and then 1, 2, 3, 4. Instead of it being a quick 1, 2, 3 with his feet, starting with the right foot, 1, 2, 3, quick out, and then get that out on the third step, he actually false steps with his left foot, and then 1, 2, 3, and then 4, 5 really quickly resettles and throws a little bit off balance. Instead of getting his third step in the ground, putting his foot in the ground and really driving with his lower body. And that's why he didn't get the throw that he wanted in that particular case. And even on the one where that he completed the next play to Izzo, the footwork was not where it needed to be. It's one of those things where, you know, that needs to be a big point of emphasis during the summer, is getting that footwork cleaned up so that when he's taking that shotgun snap, he's getting a clean 3 or 5 steps getting that foot in the ground and driving through that back foot to make sure that he's throwing with some leverage to in a strong base. And, you know, again, that is, you know, that's basic fundamentals. That's something that can be worked on all summer. I would expect that to be something that they'll look at as an evaluation of, son, this is what you need to be working on in the summer. And we'll see how that resolves coming back. But in any case, you know, I thought overall good improvement, you know, good signs from Francois, but still, again, some of those fundamental things that are going to need to be cleaned up if he's going to take the step forward that I think he wants to take and certainly that this team is going to need him to take. The number two key for 2017 that they're going to need is they're going to need to find the right solutions on the offensive line, and right away they're going to need to be reasonably gelled to be able to handle that Alabama front in game one, and certainly, you know, to be able to carry through that schedule. They're going to need to have some solutions, replacing Roderick Johnson, replacing Kareem R, and then just, you know, figuring out what the best solutions are at the other three spots where starters return, but, you know, it may not be necessarily the best guys at those spots. The thing is, it was hard to see, again, exactly how the offensive line would look because it was all split up and, you know, some of the key players in all of this were out, you know, Dickerson, Eberle, Juwan Williams, you know, these guys need to be out there for us to be able to have some ability to evaluate a little bit. That said, Josh Ball looked much better than I expected. You know, he lost his balance a couple times in pass protection, but overall was okay in pass protection. The one guy who just continually ran by him was Derwin James. Well, you know, I don't think that he's going to be the only guy at offensive tackle that's going to happen to this year. And, you know, he generally handled himself well. Even in pass protection, he was, I think, better than expected and was quite good in the run blocking game. Again, lost his feet a few times, but generally speaking, latched on and was able to do his job, both in terms of backside cut blocking and also in terms of being able to handle the edge when he was on the front side. Looks like a viable solution at that left tackle spot if he can stay healthy. He needs to get a little stronger over the offseason, but a viable possibility for that starting left tackle spot, somebody who could potentially stabilize that position. And if Juwan Williams is competitive with that at all, then that's a real positive as well. So, you know, that I think they at least have a guy who's going to be solid there. And for the record, you know, my one of my sources on this has said, you know, they fully expect the starting five next year to be Josh Ball, Landon Dickerson, Bavion Johnson at center, Cole Minshew at the other guard, and then Rick Leonard. They fully expect that to be your starting five. And, you know, my source is pretty good on that. And based on what I saw in this, that I do expect that. I mean, what I saw again from Bavion Johnson, Johnson was reliable with his snaps. He was actually pretty good in terms of his steps and his fundamentals in terms of getting where he needed to be. Showed some quickness, the ability to pull, showed the ability to get the second foot in the ground and block with some power. Definitely anchors well in the passing game. So, I mean, I think if he just, you know, gets healthy and then takes another step forward in the fall, I do expect him to be the starter at center. And again, yeah, you lose the experience that Eberle has, but if you are starting a freshman over a guy who's started a year and a half at the position, it's because you're getting better there. So, you know, that's a positive. I thought Minshew looked the best he's looked at FSU, looked light on his feet, or light-ish. I mean, as light as he's going to look. Was not vulnerable in the way that he was to some push-pull type stuff at the end of last year. Looked much better. Was, you know, is a mauler in the run game. They're going to be fine, I think. And if they can keep that core five, they can get that core five healthy and playing together in camp in the fall, then that offensive line could be pretty good. I mean, the fact is they were able to run the ball in this game despite defensive tackle being the deepest position on the team and that defensive line being quality across the board. I mean, think about that. They gave up some pressure and all that, but even some of those pressures, it was not that much. They were able to run the football, though. So, you know, that says something. And again, this came out of a very, very physical spring practice where Fisher tested the manhood of his guys on both sides of the ball in the trenches. And yeah, the edge rushers gave this group trouble. Although, again, Ball didn't have as much trouble with that aside from giving up something to Derwin. But, you know, who is not going to struggle with the edge guys that Florida State has? And most of the struggles, by the way, in terms of on the edge, were with Burns and Pugh, and that was by a pair of tackles that we're not going to see starting at Florida State next year, with Abdul Bello, who spent more time inside at guard this spring, or at least as much time inside as out, and also on the other side, you're dealing with Pugh and others there against Kelly, who is probably going to be a backup, and he's going to be your swing guy who's going to play. He might even start at guard, depending on how Dickerson is early on. But he's not going to be your starting right tackle. So that's where most of the problems were with the edge guys. And so, you know, again, looking at who's winning what battles against whom, that's encouraging, I think. The number three thing, just a few other things before I wrap this one, and I'll do another episode here briefly, or release it soon to handle some of these other things. But we're already starting to hit the time cap that I wanted for this one. But the number three thing was reloading at wide receiver, replacing three guys who went to the NFL Combine. No other team sent three wide receivers to the NFL Combine. And yes, those wide receivers were more physically limited than the guys that Florida State's replacing them with. But they were guys that you could more or less rely upon to be in the right spots so that, you know, you don't get pick sixes like what you did with Phillips being, you know, not pivoting on an X cross and turning that into the pivot route and then winding up getting picked because Francois puts it in the right spot. That's the stuff that you're trying to prevent. And, you know, again, we couldn't really see much in this one. And, you know, the spring itself was not really all that helpful in becoming more cohesive and getting better at that position because Keith Gavin missed most of the spring. George Campbell was only every other practice. And, you know, Keith Gavin, Auden Tate, and George Campbell were all out for the spring game. So, you know, and those are your three of your top four wide receivers that didn't play in this game. And so we didn't get to see very much. That said, again, based on sources, based on also going back to high school evaluations and just general sense of what they've got on the roster, I expect Keith Gavin to be the number one wide receiver next year. Again, everybody wants to talk about Auden Tate being the number one guy. And Tate, you know, may wind up having the most catches. It's possible. But I think Keith Gavin winds up really being the true number one wide receiver for Florida State next year if he stays healthy. I think that's going to be sort of the pecking order. He's going to be the guy that sets the tone out there and then allows Tate and Murray more space to operate after he, you know, again, declares himself early in the season. And I think we'll see that even as early as Alabama. He's going to be the guy that is going to be that they're going to depend upon to win some matchups on the outside physically against the way that they're going to try to play press man. And it's also worth note that other outlets are finally, and other media that cover Florida State are finally coming around to what I was saying last year about Noonie Murray and why Murray was not on the field as much earlier in the year. And you had a lot of people who were basically up in arms about, you know, the talented wide receivers. You got to put the more talented wide receivers out on the field. How dare we be playing, you know, Bobo Wilson and Kermit Whitfield and Rudolph when you've got guys like Noonie and Auden Tate who should be out on the field more, notwithstanding that Tate was out there just about as much as anybody. You know, he was in the fourth receiver role right away. But the reason that Murray was not playing was pretty plain. And I was very clear about that last year. And you know, a lot of people basically tried to shout me down on this, saying, no, you know, you still got to get him out there. Well, just pay attention to what some of the media have commented since this spring resolved, and they got to see a little bit more of how this works about, maybe that's why Murray didn't play as much last year. Maybe it's because of, the lack of effort at different points when he's not getting the football, or, not being precise in his routes here or there because, he just didn't feel like it at that moment. And just the lack of consistency in certain areas and being a bit mercurial in that regard. And the fact is, especially at that position, as a coach, you can't just let talent play because it's talent. You have to require guys to be consistent. You have to require guys to walk the line and to live up to standards in order to play. You have to. It's going to kill you in terms of team culture if you don't. You may get some additional big plays in the present, but you will pay the price 1 year, 2 years, 3 years down the line for just throwing the talented guy out there before requiring him to actually be better. Not just more talented, but better. And again, it goes back to what Coach Bowden used to say, potential just means you ain't done nothing yet. And, you got to be better before you can play. And that requires a certain level of consistency. And again, go back to Phillips causing that interception. You got to be consistent in making sure that, small things like that, whether you decide to fight through the inside coverage or stick your foot in the ground and go out, you got to be confident enough and consistent enough to do one or the other so that your quarterback knows where to throw the football. Otherwise, you're going to cause potentially game-ending or game-deciding turnovers at that position. That's what's going to happen. And again, it's important for me to note, Fisher's offense is not significantly more complicated than other college offenses in this regard. I mean, I spent part of the spring at coaching clinics at both North Carolina and at Clemson this spring, studying with their coaching staffs, getting a chance to watch their practices, and getting to see how they run what they run, how they coach what they coach. And again, it just reinforced that Fisher's stuff on all this, not really different. Not significantly more complicated than what they're asking their guys to do. I got to say, I am very impressed by how well coached Clemson is at wide receiver in particular. I will say that. But that's not a knock, by the way, on Lawrence Dossey, who I think also is a quality wide receivers coach. It's just one of those things that, again, it stuck out to me in watching Clemson practice. But, the primary difference in terms of Fisher's offense for the quarterback and wide receivers in this regard is that Fisher tends to have more five live stuff than a lot of offenses, than a lot of college offenses. That is, all five wide receivers are potential targets based, and the play call does not determine where you're going to throw the football. So instead of it being, okay, we're going to, you two guys are just going to have clear out routes, and quarterback, you're going to throw to X. For Fisher's offense, there's more. Okay, if they're in cover two, then you're going to read this underneath player and you're going to throw to him or him. If they're in cover one, then you're going to the opposite side and you're going to read this underneath player and you're going to throw to him or him. If they're in man, then we're going to automatically adjust to this. If they're going to be in a cover four, then we got a post alert. These sorts of things, and that's actually not that complicated. It's something that, becomes pretty second nature pretty quickly. And it actually is very similar to what Clemson does. I mean, that's one of the things. I mean, I was talking with Dabo Swinney about this. And, Swinney was saying for them that one of the things that they pride themselves on as an offense is always having a built-in answer for everything. And that's the same thing, by the way, that Fisher talks about. And that coaches who coached against Fisher that I've talked to have said, the thing that is distinctive about Jimbo's offense is he always wants his guy to be the last one with the chalk. His offense is always going to have a built-in answer for everything. And by the way, that's one of the coaches that coached with him and Saban at LSU told me some years ago that that used to drive Nick nuts in practice because Nick's defense would check based on what Fisher's offense was doing, and Fisher's offense always had a check to the check, and it became pretty interesting in the springs there because those guys would go at it pretty hard. But anyway, you know, Clemson and North Carolina require the same kinds of precision out of the wide receiver positions that Fisher's offense does in this. They both do the same stuff. In fact, you know, on that X cross thing, UNC calls it cowboy, and they have the same kind of thing. It turns into a pivot route if the guy gets cut off and he can't fight through it for the outside receiver. Same basic stuff. Now, you know, some of those programs run more RPO stuff. I mean, both teams run a little bit more RPO stuff, though UNC probably is going to run less RPO this year than they have. There are fewer set plays than say some of those teams will run where one, you know, they're designing a specific play to get to a specific guy. But, you know, better offenses in college tend to have more five wide or more options available for that. So this is not a distinctive thing for Fisher's offense in that regard, that it's so difficult for wide receivers. It's just not. But wide receivers still have to be precise, and it takes more than what you're used to in a high school offense. You have to learn how to do that, and you have to do it well. And I still remember how much I was not very good at this. I like to think of myself as a smart guy. You know, and I still remember, sorry, Fabian Walker, dropping a ball on Fabian Walker because I had a Charlie Blitz on the outside, and I knew my job was to pull up at 5 yards. I became the hot on the Charlie on that, and I didn't confidently run that 5 yard hitch, and Fabian put it on me, and I sort of faded to 6 yards, and it wound up being at my feet, and I dropped it. I made him look bad. Why? Well, it was really the first time in live action in the scrimmage that I'd had to actually make that adjustment. And I knew I needed to make it, but I didn't really make it confidently. And I was a smart guy. It just takes time to be able to learn those things. The good thing for Florida State is their core guys, Keith Gavin, Auden Tate, Nooney Murray, George Campbell, are all guys who are not first year in the system, and even Phillips as well. These are not first year guys. They've done this now. They've had to do this with starters. They've had to do this in scrimmages. They've had the chance to learn from this. And now is the time when you would expect those guys to actually be able to do what you would expect them to do physically, because they've begun making those adjustments. So one last thing before I wrap this episode, and I'll get to the last couple things in the next episode in terms of what other signals or what other things Florida State needed to get out of the spring, and what we were able to learn from the spring game and from the spring in general as to those things. But one other thing that, you know, has been asked of me on Twitter and elsewhere is, do I expect Florida State to end up moving anybody else to wide receiver since they're thin at that position? And, you know, they only had two scholarship wide receivers in the spring game. You know, are they going to move, say, Ermin Lane back to wide receiver? Or are they going to, you know, move, you know, maybe one of the freshmen like Wilson to wide receiver, you know, when he comes in? I really don't see that happening. First of all, having a freshman there, you know, putting Wilson there doesn't do you any more good because you already have two freshmen there. And again, freshmen wide receivers, you're really planning on them not contributing so much this year. Those freshmen are really getting prepped for next year. Just the nature of moving from high school football to college, unless you're an early enrollee, it's just going to take a little bit more time for 97 out of 100, even four-star recruits at that position. It's just, unless you're an early enrollee or unless you're, super, super intuitive and smart like a Sammy Watkins, it's just not going to happen. You're not going to be able to learn this stuff that early. But I don't expect them to move necessarily anybody out there, partly because, again, I think Fisher understands what this offense is going to be. And you're going to see a lot more 21, two tight end, one running back, and 12, one tight end, two running back personnel. You're going to see, you know, 12 personnel where you have both, say, both Cam Akers and Jacquez Patrick on the field, and then you motion Cam Akers out to be an extra wide receiver to get the same effect as having another wide receiver, but you're doing it in ways that force defenses to have worse mismatches. These are the sorts of things that I expect to see more of. Fisher knows what this team is, and this team is going to be much more, think 2012 Alabama, or, you know, sort of hybridized 2012 Alabama with 2012 Florida State offensively, where you're going to see a couple different running backs getting carries. Just like in 2012, 2013, you're going to see a rotation of those of different bodies that stay fresh. You're going to see a lot of just pounding the football and play action out of that basis. And when teams decide to load up, then you start throwing on first down, and you do that well enough again to keep them off balance. I think that's what they're going to do. And other than that, I mean, they're just going to have to stay healthy at wide receiver. But if you're in a lot of 21, you only have two wide receivers on the field at a time. So you can rotate Gavin Tate, Campbell, and Nooney Murray and do fine. But, you know, when they go to 3 and 4 wide receivers, yeah, they're going to need to stay healthy. But, you know, I think in terms of the wide receiver position, this wide receiver group is actually pretty similar to what they had in 2013. Might be more talented than what they had in 2013. And, you know, again, they need to stay healthy. And summer camp, you know, is going to be the concern when you've got a lot of volume and chances for guys to tweak a hamstring or twist an ankle or do those sorts of things. But as long as they can stay healthy, this wide receiver position has the chance to be really, really good. I mean, Keith Gavin is special. You know, Campbell offers a dimension they haven't had. So, you know, they got a chance to be really good. And again, it's similar to 2013. Think about 2013. They were so fortunate to stay healthy that year. They got 58 out of 60 starts. Were by the same group of offensive linemen. They only had one situation where they had I think two starts missed by any starter of the starting five all year. And then, you know, the wide receivers stayed healthy all year. You had Benjamin, Shaw, and Green. And really, who did you have behind those guys in 2013? You didn't have the same quality behind those guys. Imagine if Kelvin Benjamin had gotten hurt in 2013, how different that year would have been. So it's really very, very similar in that respect to where they were at that position going into 2013. So, anyway, I've already run way longer than I'd intended to on this podcast. I'm going to go ahead and put this one out at this longer length, and then I'll have another one coming in another day or so, where I'm going to discuss some of the other things. We'll talk more about defensive stuff, and then also do more quick hits of just basic observations from the spring game. But for the interim, this has been the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Thanks for listening. I made this.